You're listening to the podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Audio Boom, and thepodcast.co.uk.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the podcast with a K. Joining me this week, this is Christian Corley, and this is my co-host, James McLean. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hello. I nearly went off and did one of those kind of things. I'm the boss type of hosting presentation things, didn't I?
Me and Gareth are cool with that.
Gareth, right, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Gareth Cavanagh will be joining us later on the show.
He's actually here right now, but he just won't. Christian won't acknowledge him.
My microphone's fallen over. Hold on.
It's a little bit of a tiff they've had over the quality of Resurrection of the Daleks.
Is that what it was?
Episode 2.
I forget.
I know. Well, you've got so much going on, you just can't stand the confusion in your mind, can you?
I was watching that the other night on the Horror Channel.
So did I, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I've had them recording, so I've been sort of sitting through the ones I didn't bother rebuying on DVD that I had on VHS.
Yeah.
And that was one of them.
Just screwing this microphone down, ladies and gentlemen. Bear with me.
Yeah, well... Oh dear, did it get caught between your legs then?
No, thank God. Thank God, no, that didn't happen. I've got an arm, and it's not my arm, a microphone arm, and it's on a clamp, and the clamp's come loose for some reason. I don't know why.
That's what I mean, because there is a sort of triangular relationship between the arm and the clamp that, in certain circumstances, you could get yourself horribly trapped.
Indeed, yes. Yes,
absolutely.
You could probably. Actually, I've been watching a lot of Monty Python lately.
You're always watching Monty Python lately.
Yes, I know. Well, my sister-in-law got me a box set for Christmas, which I may have mentioned on the previous podcast. A 2008 release with everything that's been upgraded, remastered, so the visuals are much crisper than they have been, you know, like if you're watching it on TV or whatever.
Right.
It looked really good, and there's some good little documentaries at the end. One about how the Pythons broke America, which they did basically by not doing anything.
Good.
Which is very clever of them. And it was basically other people doing it for them because, you know, it was the 70s and people just didn't fly from the UK to the USA in order to promote a show, which is possibly where Doctor Who... and Doctor Who had a similar thing in America because both went... both got their footing in America through PBS, but Pythons was just huge and massive. And, you know, they ended up with Life of Brian as a number one movie at US box office, and then 2 years later, Time Bandits, which wasn't even a Python movie, really.
No.
Although Palin wrote it, Gilliam directed it, and John Cleese is in it. And that was number one as well in 1981. So, and I've been reading Michael Palin's diaries as well, which make for interesting reading. So, you know, it's not really Doctor Who related at all, unless you believe the rumours that Michael Palin or Eric Idle were approached to be the Doctor in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. What does it say in his diaries?
I haven't got that far yet.
Right.
So I can't really say.
Are you going to compare them to the published ones?
Not with you there. These are the published ones.
Well, you didn't say that, did you? You just said you were reading his diaries. You just presumed the weird old thing that it was the published ones, but no. First thing that it sounded like to me is if you were reading his diaries and he was sort of caught in the other room knocking valiantly on the door. I mean, you're a large chap. I wouldn't want to come head to head with you if you've got my diaries.
Right. Well, it's reassuring to know that after years of being a slight, bony, easily felled creature at school, that I am physically intimidating to at least one person.
Well, it's only because you've got older and you've got fat, but. I didn't mean fat. I meant muscular. I meant big bone. No, not big
bone. I filled
bone.
Out.
Filled out. He's not. He's not fat. He is just quite a large person. You know, as I've said before, it's as if he's closer to you than he actually is. Foreshortening thing. His hands! They're so much bigger than mine. Mine are fairly quite big. Mm. Anyway, so what are we here to talk about?
Well, I thought we'd talk about some vaguely related Doctor Who stuff.
All right. Resurrection of the Daleks. No?
Okay. Maybe. We'll see. You and I need to talk about Ripper Street at some point.
We do. I'm actually a little concerned at the moment.
Right.
Because I'm a man of ritual. I like in the morning my coffee and my pan au chocolat.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things. And toast sometimes. I have variations, but I have very stipulated variations. Friday is Ripper Street, where it airs. Now, Den of Geek and IMDb state that there are 8 episodes this season.
Yes.
And yet episode seven has not appeared on mine anyway.
No, nor mine. I'm beginning to think it's a 6-part series.
That's what I mean. So I've been quite upset a little about that.
Yes.
Just a little bit upset. But yeah, no, that's very frustrating. So it could be a smaller conversation than if it'd been 8 parts, because obviously it'd been 8 parts relatively. Conversation would have been longer, wouldn't it?
But we're going to look at the whole series at some point in the next maybe 2 weeks or so. We'll get together and we'll record a podcast about Ripper Street Series 4.
Good.
Excellent. Now then, something else.
Are you up to date on Ripper Street? You got up to episode 6.
I am. Yep, I'm Ripper Streeted, yes.
So it could, I mean, it feels like it could be a season finale.
It does, yes, yes.
But it say they did say it was 8 episodes.
I don't know. So, and we know they commissioned 2 series as well. A series 4 and a series 5. So
unless they've held one.
I suspect what they've either done is got it wrong and it's a 6-part series, or they've recorded both as a single block, as it were, and they've done 12 episodes in total.
Or it could have been 8 episodes with the first two, one, the double episode at the beginning.
Possibly,
making it
but
7.
I can't see an obvious kind of gap in the first episode.
Well, there'll have to be for BBC, won't there?
Well, yes, I suppose there must be, yeah. So, we'll move away from Ripper Street. We are going to talk about Doctor Who. I got an email the other day from Audible, which is one of those things that begins AUD, and then I can never remember whether I'm going to say Audible, Audio Boom, or Audacity, but it was definitely Audible, the audiobook streaming, downloading company that Amazon recently purchased, and they were doing one of their offers.
Yeah,
and I have a subscription to it because it's good for stories in the car. That we've got a copy of Tom Baker reading A Christmas Carol, and it's absolutely fantastic. If you haven't heard that, if you're wanting a copy of A Christmas Carol, maybe next Christmas, get Tom Baker's reading. It's so good; he does such a good job. Anyway, and you know, in the past, I've looked at Audible, and I haven't seen much. The Doctor Who material I've seen has all come from BBC audiobooks. It's all been soundtracks or readings by, you know, David Tennant or whoever from the New Who era of books. But just recently they've started listing Big Finish material.
Okay.
So I've just got hold of the entire first series of I was going to say Statler and Waldorf, which obviously I don't mean. Jago and Lightfoot is what I actually mean.
But do you? That's the question, isn't it?
Yes, that's a little bit of my Muppets obsession coming in there. Jago and Lightfoot was one of the series that I purchased. I also got the first series of... now I really have forgotten the name of this. Oh, Countermeasures.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the unit,
in there.
Not Unit, the 1960s Remembrance of the Daleks.
Those guys.
Guys, yeah.
Yep. And I'm going to have to hit the website now to remember what the third title I bought was. So if you don't use Audible, if you don't know about this, you pay a monthly subscription and you get X number of downloads per month. And I tend to let mine bunch up and then I purchase a load of things. As I like them, you know, I just buy stuff in bulk. So just check my library so I can just recall what the third one was. Oh, it was a Blake 7. It was Blake 714 Mirror, full cast by Peter Angelides.
Right.
So, previously I'd got hold of Liberator Chronicles Volume 4 and Frankenstein as well, apparently, it says here. And some other ones I've also got. I've got that old, you know, the Star Wars audio version?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got that as well.
Oh, that's a good Yeah. That's a good find. Yeah. I've been really wanting to re-listen to that.
But some of the older Doctor Who stuff, here's an example. There's a Brain of Morbius soundtrack, and well, reading, not soundtrack, beg your pardon. Pyramids of Mars, there's one of Corpse Marker. So the Doctor Who content on Audible seems to be improving over the last few months, so I'm going to be keeping an eye on that.
No, that's good. I mean, I don't really find enough time to really indulge. I don't know if I find enough time to actually do that. But
it's the only time that I find comes if you're driving a long way, maybe on your own, or if everyone else in the car is asleep. Doesn't occur too often at home. Certainly not when I'm working. I know, yeah, Brian used to listen to his Big Finish while he was driving.
Well, I used to for a little bit. When Big Finish first started, yeah. I remember doing that, and I used to make my trips to work to where I was working, and it wasn't a very long run, but it was just enough to get possibly almost an episode in. This was back, you know, when they only had the first sort of 8 or 9, Fearmonger and all that, and on cassette. And, yeah, it was they're kind of nice. I know people who say they can't do it because they can't concentrate. And they keep having to rewind, but I never mind that. I kind of like to have to go back and re-listen to a scene. I still do that. If I have my computer on and I'm listening, when I've been doing the Big Finish reviews for whatever that site is, and they, you know, you'll realize you're distracted and you'll go and re-listen. And especially if you've got it. I'm very lazy, so I have mine running through Winamp, and it will loop the track.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a reminder not to forget where you are or not to lose concentration, because you'll find you're listening to the same bit over again. But it isn't, you know, these are kind of nice to do that and to be able to sit back and re-listen to sections and make sure you don't lose any moments in it. If you, yeah, I really like them. I'd be quite tempted with it if I had the, as I say, if I felt I could make the downloads.
Yeah, when I listened to Dark Eyes, I was utterly baffled by it the first time I listened to it. And the reason for this was, dear listener, I had my phone's audio player set to random.
Oh, right, yeah, that could make it a problem.
It took me a little while to work out what was going on and what had happened.
Well, sometimes number filing on sort of CDs and audios can be sort of poor. I remember there was one Short Trips of Big Finish I bought cheaply, and it was, the story was very segmented. It would sort of come back to a moment in the present and then drop back to these stories which were unrelated. I think essentially, as I recall, it was basically they were just sort of combining stories into an omnibus, basically.
Right.
But because the track numbers could sometimes be confusing, I wasn't sure for a while. I had to keep going back and checking they're in the right order, because it was jarring how they were moving and between scenes. But it wouldn't have been, if I had confidence in the format and the technology, I'd have just accepted it and just listened to it. When you don't have the confidence, it's like, but no, that'd be kind. It'd be kind of cool. There was a couple that I actually wanted to listen to, and I saw them on there for like £4.99. It was one of those. And the next day I went, and it was back up to £14. And I can't. I'm not. I, you know, if I hadn't seen it at the wrong price, at the right price, I might have been tempted. But because I'd seen it do the sales hype.
Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype.
But they're good, and yeah, if you, it's a great resource, as you say, that can, because audiobooks are horrendously underrated. I mean, as far as I'm aware, and it's a shame Brian isn't here, but I think Brian tends to feel this anyway. They don't get enough coverage in the States as a medium. They don't have that value,
right?
That I think they have over here at the moment, and we have quite a thriving audiobook industry, I think, really. You can pretty much get audiobooks and anything, but these sort of specialised, like Doctor Who. I mean, you could do that for so many sci-fi, American sci-fi dramas.
Oh, God, yeah.
But they don't, because there's just not that interest.
Yeah, it tends to be Big Finish doing it for the
absolutely.
US dramas,
so you've got this,
yeah,
this very small British company doing this massive, wild-scale sort of franchise. I don't want to say poaching, because they're paying for it, but you know what I mean. They're picking up these old franchises and they're you know, giving them life, and they do a very good job, and especially with the Doctor Who stuff, you can have it in more caring hands. For all generations now, they've got Bloody River Song jumping around. I hear news of what 6th and 7th now being entertained by the song. So, yeah, right. I know.
Speaking of Big Finish, we've been hearing that they've been freezing accounts recently, haven't we? So that's interesting, because I have been concerned for some time that a lot of people have been having access to Big Finish that probably shouldn't have access to.
Might have to explain this a little more.
Yeah, basically, this is, well, I'm talking about reviewer accounts here have been locked by Big Finish while they assess everything that's going on and making sure that the people that are reviewing stuff are publishing stuff and not just listening or downloading. Any quick check of illegal websites will reveal there is Big Finish material on there. Certainly 18 months ago it was there. I see no reason why that would have stopped. So, which is obviously not very nice for the guys at Big Finish and the writers.
But it might not even be that, because, I mean, there is an argument that, I mean, because what tends to happen, and this isn't just with Big Finish, but you'll have a central account for different companies.
Yeah.
Maybe a personalized one, but it'll be a central account which the parent company has agreed that you can take to review from that account. And it could just simply be, if you think about the sort of companies that they'll give this approach to, will possibly be fan sites where there will be fans reviewing them. And you could be potentially losing money of fans who are just actually downloading from that account, who would, if they didn't have access, because they're reviewers and they're fans, they might be buying them, you know, for their proper price. Mm. So there could be that factor. And if you think of all the different websites that probably do have a Big Finish link, that could be quite a, you know, sizable amount of...
On the other hand of that, I could, if that was, if their output was what it was 5 or 10 years ago, I could probably accept that, but the vast depth of their output now means that it wouldn't be practical for a single person to purchase and review the material.
But if they're just actually, I mean, because just knowing from Casterbris, I mean, from me personally, if I could have quite easily downloaded, as you know, what I wanted in theory, I mean, you know, I wouldn't, and certainly, you know, they could be checking the other end to see what sort of downloads are coming out of that account. But the point being is that reviewers could be a little greedy and sort of take what they need to review and then maybe take another off the side. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
and they might do that every couple of weeks. I certainly think a lot of, you know, people who have that opportunity wouldn't do that. But from a company point of view, there might be a fear, or maybe there could be evidence, as I said, that some companies are doing that. Hmm. And, you know, you've got fan sites reviewing material. So it's like taking someone who loves chocolate into a candy store and saying, you can review one bit of chocolate every month or so, or every couple of months. And, you know, how many kids would go, well, there's another nice bit of chocolate there. I'm sure no one will notice if I just chew that one as well. And so maybe it maybe not just be simply sort of going to these sort of black site, whatever you want to call them, download sites. It could simply be the sort of theory of, you know, how much is being downloaded by these reviews compared to how many reviews are going up.
Yeah.
So it could be that. Either way, I think it's a good idea. And I think before as well, I think if you've got a policy which has been sort of very relaxed, and you're quite a small firm, you need to sort of tighten these things and make sure that there is no abuse in whatever way. And maybe that's it. It could even just simply be a policy thing. It could be just like, well, we've got no evidence. We've got no proof that anything's going wrong here, but really maybe we should.
Yeah.
But I don't know why we're talking about this. I think again, it's just a reminder that, you know, it's good to remind people that these are very small companies.
Well,
this
indeed. That's what I was getting at. And we got a little bit sidetracked, but the two of us. But that was essentially what I was saying. They need to be auditing this sort of stuff. And I'm glad that they are, because obviously we don't want them to be kind of falling by the wayside, because of whether it's piracy or whether it's people sort of skimming. So it's good to see. Listen, should we talk about a website? Do you think?
What is this, the website that I've not really been following the conversation that closely, but is occurring? We're talking about
the website with a K.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Just rewind a bit, because you might be new to the podcast with a K and not realise that James and myself, well, not so much James, but myself and Brian.
Certainly you.
Certainly me, yeah, were involved, set up with Anthony Dryer, then Brian came on board in 2005, the Casterbris.com website. And so I moved on from there in October. and Philip Bates, excellent Philip Bates, and Andy Reynolds. Both of them had been working really hard alongside me. Andy Reynolds had been with Custova since 2011. Philip from 2012-2013. I suspect Andy had actually been there longer, to be honest with you. Probably 2008, now I think about things. But either way, the point is they've now also moved on from Custobus. And I've had a couple of people message me saying that how sad they are about it and how upsetting it might be for me. Can I just say I'm not upset about it? I'll just get that one out of the way, first of all.
Why?
It doesn't upset me at all. It's gone as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, it's just a thing that exists that I was involved with setting up. It's like, maybe, like, I don't know, a little bit like writing a book and then putting it out there. You can't do anything about it. I've written it for, like, 11 years and then put it out there. Think of it like that. Or a magazine. Maybe perhaps a fanzine.
So you are not feeling a Star Trek 3 moment where you, as a slightly smaller framed Captain Kirk, is watching the Enterprise burn in the atmosphere, that beloved ship which he was in command of for many years, probably just as many as Custerberus, if not more. And Bones turns to him and says, "My God, Jim, what have you done?" And he's obviously quite upset because he's watching the thing he loved burning. But you don't have that. You're sort of more callous. You're more of a kind of a more Avon approach, that you will see your beloved ship spored to pieces so it blows up and you just smile.
I think what we need to remember here is that Custerberus was a group of people, writers and readers, not a spaceship. The binding thing about Custerberus was ones and zeros, not like a frame and a deck and some.
You're just playing with you know. Essentially, it is a beast, and it was commanded with a crew. Philip Bates was your Mr. Spock, or maybe Terra Nova was. They can fight it out amongst themselves. I really don't care.
I'm pretty sure Terra Nova was the Mr. Spock.
You think he was the Mr. Spock?
Yeah,
right?
I think so. Yeah.
So what was
Anthony Dry was Bones, most
he
definitely.
Was Bones.
Most
right.
definitely, yeah.
So,
oh, yes.
So, well, yeah, so maybe... So essentially, actually, if we're going to take this analogy further, Philip Bates is, in the analogy of Star Trek 3, is the Klingons who beamed over to the Enterprise after Captain Kirk leaves it on self-destruct.
No, I see your point there. Yeah. I see your point there.
Wondering where you go. And then there's this countdown, and then the whole of Custerberus blows up in their face with you watching from the planet below.
I was going to say that Philip Bates is probably Chekhov, who then gets his own ship.
Oh, no, I think you're too kind. No, I kind of like, okay, let's go with your false imagery there, because it does carry another segue.
False.
So he's Chekhov, is he?
He's Chekhov, yeah.
Right.
And for the purposes of this, he's Chekhov, because I do mention this with Gareth later on, I think. I've pre-recorded the bit with Gareth that's coming up. Just so
you're just predicting it. It's a time thing.
It's a time thing, yeah. They've got a new site coming up called thedoctorwhocompanion.com. Are you going to be contributing?
I said I would.
Good. I am.
Oh, you will be? Oh, well, I don't know now.
It's up to you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I want to be, you know, you steal Federation ships. I mean, that's property of Earth that you think you can willy-nilly take off, and I'm mixing things up a bit, aren't I?
Yeah.
Not in a good way.
You're
either.
For time.
Not a disc thing, real rappy thing. No, yeah, I probably will. Yes, I said I would. I think there's a review, actually, I did for Custerberus, which is left over, which I think is going to be used on the companion.
Right.
So, I'll be there in some way. It sounds very exciting. I think it's good because it's giving him the position of doing something of his own rather than sleeping with another man's woman, if you see what I'm saying here.
Not really, but carry on.
Well, yeah, like Custerberus was your broad, you know.
My broad? 1920s.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find the right vernacular.
1920s New York.
Yeah, well, she's your broad, she's your dame, you know, and you've got bored with her and spurned her, and he tried to take her, but you know, that's just immoral, isn't it? Really, it's just all a bit grubby. So now he's got the chance to actually to create his own woman, like a 1980s weird science. And this new woman, he'll be able to shape and in ways that myself and other feminists find very deplorable. But the point being is, yes, he'll basically have his own ship, his own boat. When I say woman, I mean a vessel as in the nautical sense rather than in the fairer sex, which again is a terribly sexist thing to say these days, as in the other sex. Which I think is quite seriously, I think is good, because it means that he'll be able to do something new rather than carry on something which, and I, you know, no politics aside, was not something he ever had total control of.
Mm.
So this is something that I think is going to be good for him. And I think he'll take what he's learned and he'll do something quite exciting. So I hope people will try and support his work. Because I think the stuff on Cerberus was, you know, the last few months, I think he did a good job. Good job keeping it going.
Yeah, absolutely, he did. Under quite tough circumstances. So good luck to those guys. And I will
I wonder who created those tough circumstances, Christian Corley.
I'm sorry?
It was Christian Corley. Who created those tough circumstances?
I don't really think we need to get into that now, do we? Because obviously, you know...
it's you.
Well, no, it wasn't me.
Sure.
Yes, I'm positive.
I mean, for the sake of... for the simplicity of audio, for the listener here, who doesn't care about the politics behind any of this, they just want a simple fool guy. And if it's your act, you're the patsy in this. Who is the person who made all this happen? Who's the one who got who sold Cerberus? It was Christian Corley. If there was any kids around here, they'd be booing at you.
Well,
especially if they were Klingon kids.
Yeah, indeed. We could wind it back further and say, who's the person who started Cerberus? In which case, we'd have to go with Anthony Dry.
Oh well, yeah, we could.
So let's blame Anthony.
See why not?
Because
we could go even further back and say the person who started Doctor Who was Sidney Newman. So let's blame him.
And blame his parents.
Absolutely. A stern letter to the BBC. But yeah, so anyway, the point being is Cerberus, the main crew who are looking after at the moment are moving on to their own thing. And this will be in the show notes, won't it? Anything that's... Have they got... They haven't got... He hasn't put up a site yet, has he? He's...
Who?
The companion thing.
Well, it's live now.
Oh, is it? I've not checked.
Yes,
I've been really busy this last week. I've not so it is up now. So you'll be.
It
in
is
the
up
show.
Now, but it hasn't launched yet. So I very much doubt if anyone was around in 2004, listening, who was following Cerberus and Doctor Who at the time. But basically, when we started Cerberus, we went for 6 months. With three different versions that we were testing, and anyone could come and visit it. And you know, occasionally we had like 50 odd viewers a day. But we didn't launch officially until January the 1st, 2005.
And
they're going to be launching in March, but
right,
it's there
cool.
now.
Oh, good. So it could go in the show notes. Which was my simple question, which you've done what I normally do, and you've just stretched out a simple point into a long, rambling. The URL will be in the show notes.
It will.
Good. There we go.
Yes.
Moving on.
So, hey, it's been a few weeks since we chatted.
It has, yeah.
In person. And Brian and I did a little chat last week about Doctor Who theme tune. Doctor Who songs. Songs inspired by Doctor Who from the original series.
Yeah,
that
I'm glad
weren't Troc. So did you hear that?
I didn't, but this isn't why I didn't hear it, because I've been busy, but I must admit, it's not a subject matter I have much opinion on, so it was a good one for me to not be involved in particularly.
I'm glad you said that, because my next question was going to be, which one is your favourite?
I hate any sci-fi inspired music.
Really? Any?
Yeah. Well, give me an example of a good one.
Give me an example. I Am the Doctor by John Pertwee.
Terrible.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's not. It's terrible.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's terrible.
What about the Fraser Hines one?
It's joke music. It's the if music could be found in a Christmas cracker. It's the sort of music that would be found in a Christmas cracker. You'd look at it once and go, oh, look, it's Fraser Hines, and then you discard it.
Doctor in the TARDIS by the Time Lords.
I loathed it. It made me angry at the time.
Did it really?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Doctor Who had been kicked off the screens, as I recall, and all that was left was this stupid, half-witted attempt to make a sort of a populist, sort of, I don't know, almost meta postmodernist. It just really peed me off. Because it was a barren land then, and there was this thing, and it didn't even have, I didn't even have bits of Doctor Who in it. It was done, you know, with, it was that sort of almost sort of casual. There was love behind it, because as far as I'm aware, that it wasn't done as anything but something that they wanted to do.
Mm.
But it kind of just came across, I think. It just represented all that in the media that just sort of saw Doctor Who as being a few silly catchphrases and stupid props. It almost trivialized something at the time for me I was very passionate about.
Okay, joining me now on the podcast with a K is our old friend Gareth Cavanagh. How are you, Gareth?
Very well, very well. In a time eddy at the moment.
Oh, really?
You've reached out to me. Yeah, all good. And you?
Yeah, not bad. Thank you for asking. Now, you regular listeners will know that you're kind of a multifaceted chap. Yes. Magazine.
No one knows what I do. That's
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Magazines, yeah. Theatre, other events. What have you got at the moment? What's going on at the moment with you?
Oh, what have we got coming up? So, at the moment, working very hard on Vorp Vorp with my colleague, Colin Brockhurst.
Okay, so how long is it since Vorp Vorp 2?
How long is it? It's been 5 years.
Is it five years? Right.
Been an extended hiatus. I mean, we were supposed to have three out for the 50th, and we actually commissioned an awful lot of stuff, which is now difficult to use because it was all tied around that. And we also did stuff which time has completely overwritten. You know, to give you an example, we were going to do a big comic strip on based on Russell's one page from the 2006 annual. About the Time War.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell had said, yes, we can do it. And we chatted with him. And we were going to basically show the end of the Time War. And we were going to show the Doctor pressing the button to end the war with the Moment. I think in the strip, the Moment was... he plucked a rose.
Oh.
He would pluck a rose, and that was the Moment. And then the petals fell. And that was the end of the Time War, and everything ended. And we had this, it was a nice piece of work. And Russell gave some good advice. But he basically, we'd put in it that it was the Ninth Doctor that ended the war. And this is why I know it was before everything that happened with the 50th. He said, that's great, but you can't, I've never said which Doctor it is that pressed the button. So you can't show it as 9, you can't show it as 8, you can't say who it is, because I've never said. He said, I know who it is, but you can't do it, because I might tell that story one day, and then your canon... He had this phrase, he said, your story's lovely, but my canon is weightier than your canon, so don't do it. So in the end, I think we just had the Doctor, we just showed the Doctor's back. That was how it was going to be done.
Right.
But obviously, as time rolled on, obviously Stephen Moffat decided that he was going to tell that story. So we'd have been pretty buggered on that score. So we had a near miss in 2013. Then 2014, for boring real life reasons, myself and Colin were busy doing things and starting different things. So we only really started looking at it again sort of just before Christmas.
Right.
We tinkered on with it. So we started before Christmas, and we're now hell for leather. I mean, it's really, it's brilliant. So we're now on for June, July, we'll be out. And that's a pretty firm, you know, hard pencil, ink it in your diary. That's when we want to be out.
Cool.
And it's there's some lovely, lovely stuff in there. We've had a little bit of a shuffle of the team. So Colin is now the sole editor, and I'm the publisher.
Right.
So you know, it works quite well. Colin's obviously incredibly detailed and involved because he's doing all the design as he always has done.
I was going to say, I imagine him being quite a taskmaster.
He's tough. But as publisher, it's great. It works for me because obviously I have oversight and I deal with all the businessy things. I'm still out talking to lovely people and doing my stuff. So I think what we have now is the best of both of us. And fingers crossed we'll be out in the summer. And I wish I could tell you more. But I'll get my ghoulies cut off by Colin, so I can't.
Okay.
Other than lovely, lovely surprises coming, and it's going to be in the summer, to tie in around the DWM 500th. And, of course, our fallback position is DWM's 800th, if we miss that. So
it's a good fallback position. You should manage that one.
It is. Or issue 752, which I think Des wrote a letter in 1979, Des Skin, because he used to write the letters from the Doctor. I do hope I haven't spoilt it for anyone, the illusion that it wasn't Tom Baker. Although Des said he's very good at forging Tom Baker's signature after that. He wrote a letter saying, I think issue 752 is a zinger. Look out for it. So, you know, no pressure, chaps at DWM. That better be good.
When would that be then? Would that be 2022 or something like that?
Oh, God, that's a very good question. I suppose they do, what, 13 a year?
Yeah, something
so
like that.
So 10, so 130, so 5, 6. I think it's in about 20 years' time.
Yeah, yeah, further than I said, yeah.
God,
yeah.
God, I'll be 43, I'll be 63 reading that. Oh, dear. Oh, well, never mind. A pleasure to come. I'm sure we'll still be there. You know, and do you know the amazing thing is DWM will still be there. Even if the programme disappeared tomorrow, I think it could do another 20 years without breaking a sweat.
I should think it probably can, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so good stuff. So I've got that coming up. Working on some bits of theatre, which is nice. One's got a lovely Doctor Who link in a way. It's called Room 5064. It's written by Adrian Rigglesford, who some of you may know as the chap who wrote The Dark Dimension, which came within a week of being made in 1993. Very tragic. But Adrian's a great writer. He's done lots of writing over the years. He's done lots of film scripts and all sorts. So this is something we talked about after we met at the BFI, and it's been worked on. And it's set in the BBC in the late 80s, and it explores a time when two producers shared an office. One producer was a firebrand drama producer called Kenneth Trodd, who did all of his work with Dennis Potter. At the other end of the office was a producer who we'll all know called Innes Lloyd, who was a very grand gentleman, you know, and obviously did all the set the Troughton Monster stuff up and regenerated Hartnell. You know, he's a great figure in Doctor Who, but it was only a small part of his career. He was a very respected drama producer, and he looked after Alan Bennett. So in this one office, and this could only happen at the BBC, you had Dennis Potter and Alan Bennett, who by all accounts didn't really get on, didn't have a great deal to say to each other, and for very, very different drama traditions. And so we've turned this into a piece of theatre.
Okay.
So it's basically like a cage at the BBC with two great fighters in there and their managers and their trainers. And that's really, really good. That's really interesting. We've got an original soundtrack by Mr. B, the Gentleman Rhymer, who some of you may know, who's playing Mr. BBC. It's a really good, surreal, interesting piece of drama. And as part of that, we're doing lots of research into all of these guys. Alan Bennett, who, of course, watched and liked Doctor Who. Dennis Potter, who again, admired it and did stuff with Verity Lambert and actually pitched a story idea in 1965 to Doctor Who, which was never made.
Right.
God, imagine what that would be. in fact, I'm told it wasn't far off the sort of thing that they did in Dreamchild. It was a very fantasy, ethereal one. So we had that. Of course, we've got the great Innes and we've got Ken. And the whole thing is set in the BBC of the 80s, which is the end of era for the BBC as we know it, with producer choice coming in and John Burt and all those changes. And we actually went to Television Centre last month, what was left of it, and did a photo shoot there.
Right.
And we went up on the roof where, you know, where you could imagine basically Michael Grade flicking his cigars ash at the plebs down there. And we went into the room and we saw the chambers and the magic. It's all been stripped out, but it's still there like ghosts. And we saw what was left of room 5064, which was on the fifth floor in the drama department. And it was like, you know, when you go into a cave, it was like a cave. It had all been chiseled back, but it still had the magic. And you got a sense of this small space where four great talents worked. So that's under development. Oh, and of course, the most obvious Doctor Who link is it's being directed by our good friend Graham Harper.
Yes.
You know, of course, arguably the greatest director of the classic era, and not too shabby in the modern era as well. He worked at the BBC he was a floor runner, started off as a floor runner, worked on things like the Space Pirates and Colony in Space in the early days, worked his way up through the BBC. So he knows all these people. He'd met everyone that's in it, and he's just lovely to work with. He's all... You know, that cliche about pace and energy, bags of pace and energy. He really is that. So, yeah, so that's good. That's happening this year. And that'll probably be on in Manchester and London. So we'll keep you informed.
Okay. Have you got sort of rough, is it going to be second half of the year or summer? Or?
It's later on. At the moment, we've done a couple of script-in-hand read-throughs where we've invited people along. And we've done one in Manchester, one in London. We're going to do another one in Manchester after Easter and another one in London after Easter. So, and lots of the cast of Doctor Who fans, which all helps because they're everywhere. They've taken over drama. So Ken Trodd is being played by a chap called Cliff Chapman, who is well known, I think, on a lot of the boards and the forums. A very fine actor. Rod Tame is playing Innes, very grand chap, and he's emceed some events for me. He did the Chris Benjamin event for me at Fab. And who else is in it? There's lots of Doctor Who links all infused through it, which is right because we've inherited drama.
Okay.
So we've got that coming up, and hopefully more personal appearances at Fab Cafe. Got one that is virtually ready to announce. That'll be lovely. And a couple others in the pipeline. So stay tuned.
We will look forward to hearing more about those. Now, I wonder, what are you doing to fill your lonely Doctor Who free Saturdays?
gosh, that's a good question. I tend to watch football on Saturdays. So I generally fill it with football, and then I see what's on the magic Netflix box.
Yeah.
Which, see, I must admit, I am coping without Doctor Who being on.
What are you watching on Netflix?
Well, I have been watching Making a Murderer, which is, you know, stunning, and I can see why it's got people angry. I've got our Sarah watching it now, and she came in and went, oh, this is outrageous, outrageous. So I thought, well, they're good filmmakers. Oh, I've been watching Better Call Saul, which just started, series 2. Mm-hmm. Like it a lot. It's wasn't sure about the first series, but series 2, yeah, it found its groove. So watching that, and what else? I've started watching The Wire, which I've never seen.
Right.
Do you know what makes it feel old? It's in 4:3. It's not in 16:9.
Is it really?
Yeah, and in modern TV parlance, that might as well be in black and white.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I was really surprised, actually.
Low def, black and white with video interiors and film exteriors.
As it should be. Traditional three-camera setup, which is lovely. So I'm doing that, and what else am I watching? Oh, Walking Dead's back, so that's quite good. It's interesting.
We've been watching Jessica Jones.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Well, I haven't been watching it. I've been kind of... Kerry started watching it without me. She didn't know what it was. She just like put it on and started watching it. And so she got to the third episode, and Tennant turns up and shouted me. And I said, what are you watching? I said, oh, hold on, you're not supposed to be watching this. You're not supposed to be watching this without me. And so I've been dipping in and out of it as I've been passing through. Because she's watching it while I'm working, basically. She's watching it in the morning when I'm at work. So I haven't really seen much of it. But I have just seen an episode where... who's the black guy? Is that Luke Cage?
That's Luke Cage.
I thought it was Luke Cage.
It's not obvious, is it?
No, it's not. But I thought it was, yeah. And he's... Kilgrave's controlling him and he's trying to kill Jessica and then she shoots him with a shotgun. This is a spoiler, by the way, if you haven't watched it.
It has been out for how long?
And that was a really, really good sequence. I was watching, like, I stood there watching it for about 20 odd minutes and I really enjoyed what I was seeing. So it looks like it's a really good show.
Tennant's really good, actually. He's barely in it for the first couple of episodes, but do you know what? It gives you a taste that if in a wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey world, let's say, for instance, Eccleston carries on and does the role for 3-4 years, and they cast Eccleston as the Master, that, for me, is how the Master should be played. Tennant's Kilgrave. He's perfect. Mm. I think you could even bring him back now as a real mind-wibble and, you know, recast the Master as Tennant. It would be brilliant. And Kilgrave shows how it's to be done.
That's a very good thought. I couldn't argue with that.
But no, it's a good series. Have you seen Daredevil yet?
No, I haven't seen Daredevil yet. I haven't seen anything. I want to watch Gotham as well, and I haven't got around to seeing Gotham yet.
Gotham's great. It's all about the Penguin.
Apart from the first, I've seen the first episode, but I haven't seen anything since then. But
I only watch it for the Penguin. It's basically his show.
Right.
There's a couple of episodes where the Penguin shares a flat with the Riddler, and it's just pure gold sitcom perfection. It's great. But no, watch Daredevil. Daredevil, because Series 2 is launching in about 2 weeks.
Right. That's a lot to squeeze in then, isn't it?
Oh, no, I watched it all in one day.
Okay.
I feasted on the entrails. I couldn't resist. It was so good. So I would recommend packing that one in. And we've got House of Cards coming back. Do you know, it's a golden age of telly. It's sadly, most of it's not British. But packed with British talent.
Well, there's some good British stuff out there. I mean, we mentioned Ripper Street to you a few weeks ago, and we're halfway through Series 4 of Ripper Street now.
And have they made that much?
Yeah. Apparently, there's going to be one more, and then that's it. One more series, and then that's it. But yeah, they're doing really well with that. And I mean, the fourth series is stunning, as the third series was. I think it's taken a kind of a quality. What's the word I'm looking for? It's hit a quality peak since parting from the BBC, basically. Since Amazon.
Really? That's interesting, because watched a couple of the first series because it had some interesting actors in it, and I found it all a bit hokey, if I was being honest.
Yeah. I mean, you had people like Sean Bean and Paul McGann in it then, just popping up.
It's full of quality sort of, you know, character acting, you know, Hollywood thesps, but it did feel a bit hokey, and it was all full of sort of books and wenches, and it was like a sort of Hammer horror movie from the 60s, but with a bit more budget and a little bit of a wink and a nod to modern audiences,
which I
felt I didn't need. But if it's as good as...
Oh, yeah,
telling me it's good.
Yeah, it's developed considerably.
I file it under Primeval upstairs in my head, in that I'm pleased everyone else seems to be enjoying it, but it doesn't seem to work for me.
Ah, Primeval. I could do an entire podcast on... You could do a series of podcasts on Primeval. It was so near to being good, and yet they just didn't cross the line. The finish line, as it were.
Do you know what I like about it? And I'll give it this. Back then, ITV had the bottle to go, Doctor Who, eh?
Yeah.
Let's put some drama up against it. Not going, Doctor Who. How can we bugger this up? Give Simon Cowell a tinkle. Let's see what he's got. Or let's have, you know, celebrity ironing. And we'll have, you know, Maureen Littman trying to iron a very difficult crimpoline dress. And we'll mark it. You know, at least they were fighting drama with drama. And even though they lost, I get the sense that Primeval was very well thought of. Whereas I haven't seen ITV. ITV have given up the fight. On that.
Well, they had to go with their Jekyll thing, didn't they? The Mr. Jekyll.
For about a week.
Yeah, for a week,
For about a week, and then they shunted it to Sunday and
how would any new drama writer have any confidence in writing and pitching to ITV, you'd just go to Sky United and BBC, wouldn't you? You wouldn't go anywhere near ITV. You wouldn't touch them with a barge pole if you're doing anything that wasn't a police show.
I think you would need ITV to come to you. You know, in the same way everyone wanted Russell.
Yeah.
In the early 2000s, at ITV and Channel 4 and BBC. BBC came to him in the end and said, look, we'll make whatever you want. Oh, I want Doctor Who. I said, we'll make anything you want. No, Doctor Who will do nicely. You know, and I think that until ITV finds someone that they go, we need this person, we just let them have their head. I don't see it happening again. It's a shame.
Yeah.
What did you think of Jekyll?
I did not see it, unfortunately, so I'm not qualified to comment. It seemed interesting, but at the same time, the whole setup didn't seem entirely divorced from the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
That kind of put me off.
Yeah.
I watched one where it was the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Right. Okay.
And I suppose having a posh Hulk is pretty British, which is what it was. But it didn't feel distinct enough. It's an odd one. Maybe it needed a second series and they'd have ironed out all the kinks, but in that fast fail world of television,
we're kind of past that now, aren't we? You can't survive if you're not going to iron out the kinks within the first couple of episodes, can you really? No.
Well, unless you're called the X-Files.
Well, yeah. Well, that's for another podcast.
Well, yeah, but I've watched the first three.
Right.
I think I said to you, one and two I thought were dreadful. Actually, very poor television. But three with the lizard bloke, quite enjoyed. Okay.
I'm behind yet, so I haven't caught up with that, because I'm still trying to catch up with Ripper Street Series 4. I'm about 2 weeks behind on that. And there's other things going on. Hey, one thing I was going to ask you about, and it's completely slipped my mind. So I don't actually know where I'm going with this conversation at all. So I'll probably
go on. Let's freewheel it, man.
I want to edit this bit out. Oh, I remembered now. The other thing that I do watch, because I'm a sucker for mystery dramas, is I've been catching up with Old Midsummer Murders on ITV3.
Oh.
I know.
Are they your afternoon guilty pleasure?
I don't have time for the television in the afternoon. God damn it. These are evening guilty pleasures.
I'm an ITV3 man as well. I like their George. Well, and when they rerun Never the Twain, it's a treat that just cannot be replicated.
Well, we had ITV3 on last night when we went to bed. Yes. So when I woke up this morning, put the TV on, it was only Man About the House.
Really?
Or Robin's Nest. I forget which now. One or the other. And so that was on first thing this morning. But no, I was watching Midsummer Murders last night, and it was an episode with Peter Capaldi in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And who is he playing?
He's playing
an angry postman.
An angry choir master.
An angry choir master. That's brilliant casting. I feel that.
He's very good in it. It's full of good performances, that episode, actually.
Wow. That's basically how he's playing the Doctor.
Angry.
Yeah, cross. Angry choir master.
Angry choir master, yeah.
A little bit disappointed with his pupils, knows that they can do better. When they pull it off, he's secretly pleased, but he daren't tell them he's pleased.
Right, have you seen this episode? You're absolutely right.
I haven't seen it, but I know exactly what they do. Oh, dear.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and is he the murderer?
No, he's not.
It's a spoiler, but it is like 90,000, so he's not the murderer. Who is the murderer?
The actor, I can't remember the name of the actor. He's the guy who does the voiceovers on The Meaning of Life.
Oh, it's not the same guy who does Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is it?
No, I don't think it is, no.
Oh, no, I know. He's the guy who's got the really deep voice.
Yes, that guy, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember his name right now. He'll be in the show
Chapter
notes.
Chapter 6,
yeah.
Death.
Yeah.
Him, anyway.
Yeah, that's the guy, yes. Yeah, he's the moiderer, yeah. it was a fun episode. It was a John Nettles one as well. So it's about from 2008, I would estimate. Probably 2008.
Well,
2009. Capaldi looks so much younger.
If you get any complaints about spoilers, tell them to stick.
Yeah.
You've had 8 years to watch this. Anyway, Capaldi looks like a youth, does he?
He comparatively, compared to now, he does, yeah.
Well, I suppose that's the stress, isn't it? He looks a lot younger in The Thick of It, actually. So I watched a few of those on Netflix last month. And some of the early ones, my goodness, he really...
Yeah. Actually, he looks a lot younger in The Time of the Doctor.
Oh, that is brutal.
So, you know, it just backs up what they say about Doctor Who, about the role of Doctor Who. Give him a male companion.
God.
Let him do the running about.
It is I've got no answer to that, really. I don't know. It must be a killer to film, because it does seem to burn them all out. The only one who's come out of it looking exactly the same as he did, well, there's Smith and Tennant, I suppose. But Smith is about 12, and Tennant obviously knew how to do it.
Well, McGann aged 19 years, I suppose.
Yeah.
Doing two episodes.
Brutal. Do you know, I really don't know why they didn't have McGann play that role instead of inventing the War Doctor.
No, clearly we talk about this on a quite regular basis on the podcast, and no one seems to have an answer for it.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And in fact, it doesn't make sense in a way. It doesn't make sense for it to be Eccleston either. Because of that, you know, because Rose sort of suggests, although I know you've got the weird postcards of him on the Titanic and stuff, Rose more or less suggests that he's not long regenerated and it's a new face. So,
yeah. Although there's a bit of amnesia at the end, though, isn't there? So,
I suppose the convenient amnesia. This is true. Yeah.
But so that. Listen, we were going to wrap things up shortly, but I'm interested to know. Are you a Doctor Who merchandise man? Is there anything that you've got that you really treasure that's a piece of Doctor Who merchandise?
Oh, well, I have got one of the original Trooper helmets from Earthshock.
Right.
Which I bought off eBay back when it just started. I was on eBay in about 1998.
Uh-huh.
When the Doctor Who, you type in, there wasn't even a Doctor Who category. You had to type in Doctor Who into the search, and there was about 8 pages of stuff came up. Not like now, where it's 198,000 items, and most of them seem to be rubbish.
Well, the thing is, as well, now people hold on to stuff, don't they? Now people are hoarding stuff to sell it in like 20 odd years or whatever on eBay, where it's going to go for pretty much the same amount of money as it's going to go for now, because there's going to be that much of it, unless there's some sort of international cataclysm or a nuclear war or something, and most of this stuff's going to get destroyed.
Or a unique item with provenance. So I've got some nice scripts. I've got Chris Boucher's first drafts of Robots of Death,
mm-hmm.
which are what we used as the basis for his original scripts, which we used as the basis for the Robots of Death stage play.
Yeah.
As they have got some subtle tweaks in it. So I've got things like that. I've got some nice scripts. I've got most of David Banks's original scripts. I've got all sorts of, you know, they're interesting things. But do you know what? I would sell. I've got to the point now where I haven't looked at them for years. I would sell them. Should I tell the thing that gave me the biggest smile, which I found by accident? Because I've got, I think, some original scripts from Louis Marx's scripts from Planet of Evil.
Right.
And it's lovely. But in the package, and I was more interested in this, in the package was a perfect, unused 1970s BBC Doctor Who production office compliment slip and a beautiful unused Doctor Who window envelope. And I thought they had more magic than the script. Very sad. So it all boils down to a bloody Earthshock helmet and a compliment slip.
And a compliment slip.
I'm so easily pleased, aren't I?
Absolutely. I think we'll leave it there, Gareth. Ladies and gentlemen, Gareth Cavanagh, and as he says, What Vorp issue 3 is expected to be out later this year. That's probably it. Shall we do a little outro, the two of us, and then we can pretend that you were there for the entire thing?
Well, you can do. I mean, if you like, I'll just say a few things and you can just splice them into Gareth's conversation.
No, you're all right.
I'll just go, what? You what?
Exterminate!
Arse. That's a terrible bit of music.
Yeah, okay. So that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with Kay. Thank you, James.
Yeah, whatever.
And thanks to Gareth Cavanagh. You're a fantastic guy. And we'll be back with another podcast next week.